Good morning, and welcome back to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Henry Frayne, is at the controls this morning. And we are pleased to have back on this program once again, Bill Rose. He is a research architect with the U of I Building Research Council, which is housed within the School of Architecture here at the U of I. And over the years, Bill has been here on the program for a number of conversations about design and construction of buildings. And we've talked about lots of different things, how buildings are made, how we feel about them, why some we like and some we don't. And certainly in recent years, we've talked a lot about the energy that goes into the construction and the operation of buildings and how we can make our buildings more green. And I, as I've said before, I think on the program, I like to think about this as a conversation that never really ends. we say, Bill comes by, we talk, and then we say, well, we'll see you in another day. Well, we'll figure this out the next time. And we ask him to come back. And we're really always happy to have him here on the show. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. So at any point here, give us a call, and we'd be very happy to talk with you. Well, it's good to have you here once again.
Good to be here.
Well, now, we've been talking about this certainly for a while. I don't know how long. We've been talking about energy efficiency, design and construction of buildings. People are certainly paying attention to it they're thinking about carbon footprint. They're also looking at their bills. They're particularly looking at it, I'm sure, when new buildings are built. We're trying to do what we can for existing buildings. I guess maybe the question would be, well, given the fact that we've been working on this for a while now, Can we say that we've actually made some measurable progress?
No. Next question.
Okay.
obviously, that needs to be qualified. But if you look at what the energy consumption numbers are in buildings, and this is available through data from the Department of Energy, Energy Information Administration for commercial buildings as well as for residential buildings. Per square foot energy consumption for commercial buildings started to go down in the late 1990s. So The per square foot energy use in buildings, commercial buildings, is slightly less for the 2000 to 2003 buildings for which we have data than for the square foot energy intensity for the previous decade. We're not quite at the low energy consumption for a building that was built in the 1920s. I mean, that is the consumption today. Mm-hmm. In buildings that were built back then. That is, the energy intensity kept going up in the 1990s, and it just started to come down just a little bit. Of course, we have more square feet, and so if you look at the picture, how much energy are we using? That in buildings in the United States, those numbers haven't started to come down yet.
Well, assuming that we got a pretty good idea what we could do.
Yeah.
So it's not like we don't know how. Is the problem that even though you could say, I'll promise you one of these days you're going to get this money back, that it means spending money up front and that people are just for some reason they're saying, well, we don't have the money. We can't afford to do that. I mean, why aren't we really doing what we know how to do?
I saw something that crossed my desk or maybe at home. There was a set of guidelines on things you can do to save energy. I guess it was at home. My wife was the one who first noticed this. And it says, only wash your clothes on cold. Don't wash them on hot. And I thought, okay, that's pretty stupid. We're not going to go there, okay? It didn't say hang your clothes on a clothesline to dry them, and there's way more energy that goes into running an electric dryer than there is that goes into heating the water necessary to opt for a hot water wash rather than a cold water wash. So this is lifestyle stuff. But after we've picked the low-hanging fruit, you have a setback thermostat. Is it set to the lowest comfortable temperature during the winter and the highest comfortable temperature during the summer? There are a lot of really easy things that you can do. The next ones may involve a little bit of you may feel the effect of it. A lot of people say what we really need are zero-energy buildings. Can we do buildings that are zero-energy buildings? And the answer is yes. And in effect, every building is a zero-energy building if you turn off the electricity and you turn off the fuel supply to it. Am I being facetious? Actually, no. 100 years from now, in a way, we might be saying all the buildings are zero-energy buildings. It may play out that way. We don't really know how it's going to play out, but. The easy way to save energy in a house or in any building is to say to yourself, how much money do I want to spend on energy? And then you ration yourself to that amount of energy in your house or your building. And I strongly suspect that even many of the people who say, what can I do to save energy and my blah, 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 those people have already thought about this, and they're not really asking, you know, what can I do? They're asking what's the trade-off between sacrifices for me and these energy savings. In some ways, those sacrifices can be calculated as life cycle cost, payback of investment, and in other ways, they just really reach to how we're doing, ride your bike rather than ride a car. But in order – well, we need more information on how to answer these questions best. I've tried to prepare a list for different agencies on what do we really need to do. And at the top of the list, I put let's get all building energy use data out there in the public. I'd even go so far as to say, utility companies, turn over all your monthly billings on houses to a public database, and we'll come up with some kind of engine to analyze it. If I know who's using what, then we can really start making some decisions. Okay, probably isn't going to happen. But one thing that – here's what I'd like to see happen for the utilities or the state utility commission to fund energy dashboards. A lot of people are working on this idea. So that for any homeowner or any building owner, if they're asking the question, what can I do to save energy? Well, with me here on the radio, I'm probably not in the best position to answer that question for those. I'll give it a try, and I welcome calls on this issue. But if you really want the answer, the way to do it is to measure, monitor how much energy is being used, how much electricity is being used, how much electricity is being used by the air conditioner, how much natural gas is being used for the furnace, for the hot water heater. Have a sensor at each of these. Sensor sends a wireless signal to a receiver. The receiver is plugged into the USB port of a computer. You have a 16-year-old at the computer who really knows all this stuff and is interested in it. And the computer is connected to a website. And the 16-year-old asks the web starts the process rolling, and so there's a listing on the database that tells you what the outdoor temperature and humidity is, indoor temperature and humidity. All these things are kind of fed in, so you get a picture of what's happening in an individual building, and then the website can put that together with energy cost data with outdoor weather, temperature, rainfall, and get a picture, a profile for previous years of how much energy this particular house uses. And then they're in a good position to say, okay, here's a prioritized list of energy-conserving measures you might want to undertake. And let's not just go and do it. Let's see if how good it is. Let's see how good it works. You want to do replacement windows. We're not going to promise that replacement windows are going to have a high payback. But if that's what you'd like to do and it's number six on the list, then fine. Let's give it a try. We've collected a year of data. We're going to do this like it's an experiment, a science experiment. Then you put it in, and then we're going to collect the data for a couple months afterwards, and we're going to be in a position to tell you how well you did with this particular retrofit. Not only are they going to be able to tell the homeowner how good a job it is, but since the utility or the commission paid for all this equipment, then they're going to use the data and compile it with other data from other dashboard users to come up with a number that says here's how good such individual retrofits actually are. We're flying blind. We're sort of saying, oh, just use cold water in your laundry wash. Come on, that's really dumb. That's really dumb. But if we want to get smart, then we have to. I think we really have to study it. Okay, I'm biased. I'm a researcher. I'd want to bid on the research project, but you get the picture. Yeah. You know, we really need more information.
Yeah. Well, let's take a caller here at Kankakee. By the way, our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Bill Rose. He is a research architect with the Building Research Council. That's housed in the School of Architecture here at the U of I. And this, particularly this subject, and then more generally design and construction of buildings, is something we've been talking about on and off now for a long time. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Kankakee, there's a caller here waiting in line four. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. Good subject. I wanted to know windows. I've done research on windows, and I have yet to find one that's really efficient after, you know, maybe half a decade to a decade. It seems to be drafty around the edges. Especially double hung windows, they're very, very drafty. And the only way I know of shutting them out would be get these storm windows on there. I think that's a major problem with heat loss in the house.
Yeah.
And the same thing with some doors. The doors and seals every year people forget about that. I'm a contractor by trade myself. Yeah. I used to build houses years ago and. But now I've gone around doing kind of handyman stuff, and I've yet to find something that really is good for windows. I mean, that seems to be where the draftiness is. I know you're talking about, you know, washers and dryers, but I think if people could be at least button up part of the house, that would save them a little bit more on the heating bill. Plus, their ceiling fans. I think a lot of people need to start using these ceiling fans for heat.
Uh-huh. Thanks. That bringing up the issue of windows is, I think, a really good and important one. I may risk stepping on a few toes by saying that it's my perception that the payback period for replacement windows is very long. Research has been done on the different energy-saving strategies within the weatherization program. And I've been allowed to see some proprietary reports, and they go in that direction, that replacement windows may well have a benefit, but they come at considerable expense. And it's probably not the first thing I would do on windows. What you're suggesting, I think, is much more to the point. Storm windows, I think, would be first. And storm windows can be installed. I much prefer outdoor storm windows if in historic buildings to interior storms. But two layers is better than one, and three layers is better than two, provided that the overall assembly is airtight. And that's what you're getting at, is can double-hung windows be retrofitted in a way that the wind isn't going to blow right through them?
Exactly. You know right. What I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. And you're probably familiar with work on windows that involves the installation of either foam or bronze weather stripping of several
right.
kinds. And I think anyone who's interested could look up this issue and come up with a dozen or more different contractors or advisors' ways of doing window retrofit. You say you're a contractor, so
yes,
you're the
yes,
person
sir.
They would turn to for this. Let me just give
That's one of my – in fact, I just got through doing a proposal for somebody that has major window problems. The biggest problems I see out there are casement windows. Again, I can nitpick windows to death, and trust me, I'm an experienced in I bought good windows in the past, and I spent a lot of money on them.
Yeah.
But I'm finding after a certain amount of time, 8-10 years down the road, you know, seals have gone bad, and you know, the especially on casements, the wood starts rotting out because the seals go bad, and even though they're vinyl clad on the outside and wood on the inside,
mm-hmm.
It's just the working mechanisms is very impossible to get. You almost have to be a fly-by-nighter. But I feel that the industry out there needs to do a better job of trying to make things more energy efficient, because they haven't done it. I mean,
yeah.
Even just in general, building a house, but. Great subject. I'll get off. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. I don't know anything else you want to add to
that? The National Park Service in the late 1990s, maybe early for 2000s, ran a series of workshops on historic windows. The proceedings from those workshops are, I think, available through the National Park Service. These are incredible documents. They talk all about the different ways of retrofitting old windows, historic buildings or not. I don't distinguish if it's old, it's historic. It's fine with me. I would urge anyone who's concerned about the condition of their windows to look first and for a long time at retrofitting existing windows before taking out those windows. I run into a fair amount of regret from people who have taken out the old windows, put in the new. There's a change. There may not be the savings that people are looking for, but what we really need is cultivation of skills, as the previous caller suggested, skills at improving improving these windows. And I think what he was saying, seemed like he was saying, is it looks like we could do a good job, but if we really put our heads together, figure this thing out better and come up with new ways of doing it, of working on existing windows. I think that's true. I find these bronze weather strippings aren't satisfactory. I want to use felts in the sliding guides, but you don't find work on that. So I'll have to do it on my own house and talk about it.
Well, one other thing, I guess I don't know if this is a related issue or a separate issue or what, that I think when people think about, well, I have problems with my windows, so I need new windows, that, you know, when you're building a house, you build a wall, and then you put a hole in it, and you put your window in that hole. Well, you also have to think about air infiltration around the rough opening that you've put. There's a hole that you put in your wall to put the window in.
That's right.
And how many cases people think, well, I got problems with my windows. They're leaky. They're cold. And so what I'm going to do is put a new window in there, and don't think about the hole.
That's right.
That it goes into.
That's exactly right. If you look closely at the window, there a double hung, for example, there's a pulley for the sash cord, and the pulley has a big old hole right through it. And so you have to ask yourself, okay, what is communicating with what? I can see the hole. It's right there. But there's a lot of room for improvement in our techniques. People are trying out some things. Those of you who have taken out double-hung windows know that there's a heavy cylindrical weight on the other end of the pulley running up and down in this – rattling up and down in this empty slot. You say to yourself, boy, there must be air coming through there. Some people are using PVC piping to create a chase for the movement of this weight so that it moves easily up and down, and then they foam the rest. Well, hey, that – sure. Let's give it a try. I'm not going to say that's the best way to do it, but as the caller suggested, we can make a lot more improvements, I think, than we typically talk about. And it's not as though there's a single solution here. It'd be great to try 20 and all get together and figure out what's best.
About midway through here, talking with Bill Rose. He's research architect with the U of I Building Research Council in the architecture school. We're talking about sustainability in buildings, and when we talk about wanting to build green, what exactly that means. Questions welcome. We have somebody from Belgium here, line number one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. There was the two points you've dealt about so far. I'd like to make an observation or a question about each. And the one that's most recent one with windows, a lot of people will take an older style building and replace interior to it some vinyl double hungs made out of vinyl. Now, where that is probably cost effective, it's probably not really the best way to solve the problem of air coming in. You should probably totally remove the entire unit, go out to the rough opening, and replace it with a much higher quality window that these manufacturers make today, are cladded up much tighter and much more efficient, but they cost a lot more money, okay? The ones that you just install into a pre-existing double-hung window, you take the sashes out and remove the sash weights and all, et cetera, they do a decent job, but they're not nearly the quality if you go clear back to a very high-quality built window. Cost more, but you're going to get a lot more bang for your dollar. But the other thing I wanted to point out is that your discussion about keeping track of what energy a house uses, well, the power company is doing that now. If you remember, they've come around and put new meters in your homes. They can keep track of what electricity you use and when, and they are doing that to a much higher basis. And if you notice recently, Illinois Power has come by and said, would you like to go into a new billing system, which is really taking advantage of that very technology. And I think that's where I'm at.
Okay. Thank you. We certainly haven't settled the window issue. And I think all the information that goes out there that opens up possibilities is good. Yes, we're making it much easier with wireless transmission for the meter reader to come and read the meter. That change, I think, is to the benefit of the services that the utility provides. They didn't give me one of those receivers to read my bill and my neighbors and everyone up and down the street electronically. And of course, the data on how much energy my building uses has always been available to customers, but it's always been lumped and averaged so that it becomes harder to use as a research tool for saying, here's the strategy that we ought to target to this particular area. That's the kind of the scale of data collection for research and policy improvement purposes that I'm suggesting. But those are great comments. I appreciate it.
All right. We go on to talk with somebody in Urbana, line two, right here. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I had a comment about the replacement windows. Mm-hmm. And do you know who Bob Yap is?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. So he says that they're called replacement windows because you have to keep replacing them.
Well, that sounds like a much more concise way of saying, I guess, the same thing that I've been saying. He's better at it than me.
And also, he recommends keeping your old windows and doing as much as you can to those old windows with storms and, you know, whatever, refurbishing the windows rather than getting replacement windows.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're on exactly the same page there.
Anyway, well, this is very interesting. It's a good program. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. Other questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I guess I'm still thinking about going back to your example that about some people saying, well, you want to reduce energy use in your house, wash your clothes in cold water. and I guess I'm just thinking about the fact that, you know, particularly the, you know, popular media is full of all kinds of stuff kind of like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like people don't care, and it's not like they're not trying to get good information. And I think a lot of people are trying to, you know, they're trying to do the right thing. If for no other reason, then they look at their utility bill and they say, you know, what can I do about this? Yeah. So, you know, you have stuff like that, and we have people saying, well, just put on a sweater and turn down your thermostat, or we say go out and replace all your lights with compact fluorescence, or you know, whatever. It makes me wonder, well, of all the kinds of advice that people are given and that's reasonable to do without spending an enormous amount of money, well, can you really say to people, okay, I can give you a few things that are relatively easy and where the cost is relatively low that would help.
Yeah. Well, we can sort of still do that, but maybe for another year or two. And then we're going to have to really start getting serious. Then we have to take the efforts that we've put into finding not the low-hanging fruit, but the fruit that already fell off the tree kind of and happened to fall right in your basket. Okay, that, you know, we can do that.
Yeah.
But here, for example, is an observation that has been kicking around our office, and that is that the big change in housing during the bubble, during the big climb up till a few months ago or a year or so ago, resulted from lowering housing density. That is, we've gone from having 2.6 persons per house to some lower number. And we might say, what would happen if we went back to the same housing density that we had before? Well, you'd find that there's probably a surplus of about 8 million houses on the market. We're dealing with housing foreclosures, with people losing their homes. What if we said we might have to recapture that original density? We can't afford the waste of space of having this low a number of people in the space. Your brother-in-law lost his house, and maybe he and his family have to move in with us for 8 months till he gets back on his feet or something like that. These kind of become the housing decisions and housing energy decisions that move away from the technical change out the for compact fluorescence and the easy things, the things you do kind of painlessly, to the ones where energy decisions, housing energy decisions, reach us at a different level. And I think we have to redirect the efforts of energy advisors in housing away from the 100% technical to, you know, maybe 95% technical and 5% social and painful. If you knew my brother-in-law, you know.
Well, let's talk with some more folks here. Let's go to Champagne Line 1 for another caller here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Well, I wanted to thank you all, both of you, for making my day. There was a number of years ago, my wife and I decided for our 1948-built house to rebuild the windows instead of replacing them. So we took a week of vacation time and dismounted all the casement windows and reglazed and you know, rebuilt, and I'm feeling much better about that today, so thank you.
Yeah. A week, that's good.
Well, we worked very hard.
That's the, right. That's good. That's good. It'd take half a day or a day for a craftsperson to do it well, I think.
Well, yeah, we were lucky in that I'm probably being a little bit generous with my efficiency. It was probably more like 3 or 4 weeks, counting all the after work and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a major amount of time.
Yeah.
But luckily we had windows that were made by the Anderson Company, and so parts were available.
Great.
And we just went to Alexander Lumber and explained the part we needed, and they said, "Sure, we've got that on the shelf," or "Sure, we can order that for you." So it was
great.
A nice experience to rebuild something.
Yep.
Secondly, my second point, I guess, for your consideration is that I think another way to be more efficient about housing is to live in less space. I think mm-hmm. 4 people living in 5 or 6,000 square feet of space is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And heating and cooling that, and I guess that's my point there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. When Americans go to international conferences on energy-efficient buildings and show the examples of the energy-efficient houses that they've constructed, they're often laughed off the stage by Europeans and others who say, "No, you can't have energy-efficient buildings this big. Sorry."
Yeah, well, there's too much surface area.
Yeah.
Well, I think did we give you a chance to make your points? I didn't want to cut you off if you had a follow up.
No, I did not.
Thanks.
These huge sheetrock barns that house 2 or 3 or 4 people is not a very efficient way to use our resources.
That's right. Yeah.
That would be my point.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, and that's you know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen and observed this trend. You know, in the town where I grew up over the last 10-15 years, and an incredible amount of the existing housing stock was torn down, and newer, bigger houses were built on the same lot. Sometimes, they took every square inch of the footprint that was possible. They build these new houses, and also places where they're building new houses from the ground up. You know, they go out there where there was a cornfield and they scrape it flat, and then they build these enormous houses with 3-car garages and these rooms with these huge ceilings and all these bathrooms and bedrooms and stuff. And I guess, given that the statistic that you cited, I wonder, in another 10 years or 20 years, what are we going to do with these houses?
Well, when there's a class action lawsuit 10 years from now by our children, and they want to sue the current generation, people who've done things in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. I hope they come after those people, and I'll be very happy to serve as an expert witness to favor punishment for that kind of behavior. I find no excuse for tearing down perfectly good houses in order to put up houses that I can tell you are going to be gone through natural processes long before the house that they tore down would have gone from natural processes.
Yeah.
Sue them.
Okay. If you want a cranky old architect to be a character witness for you, I got a guy for you. Keep us in mind. Let's go to line number 2. This is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I have a question. People purchase cars now based on miles per gallon.
Right.
And what I tried to come up with was a BTU per cubic foot per day per house formula. And I was just wondering, what I did was I took the fuel consumption by month for my heating bill and subtracted out my hot water heating. And then I took measurements from interior rooms and calculated the space and came up with an average BTU per cubic foot per day cost and our BTU per cubic foot per day.
Right.
Period. Is there any more extensive items that I could add into my formula to make it more efficient and more actual?
Well, the standard measure that is used by the EIA, the Department of Energy, people who measure energy consumption in buildings, they actually go typically on a KBTU, thousands of BTUs per square foot per year. Huh? And you wind up on the order of 90,000 BTUs, 90,000 BTUs per square foot per year.
Mine came up to 102,000.
Yeah. And so that's that is pretty well established as a unit of measure. And you can find a good basis of comparison by going on square feet rather than cubic feet. There's also an interest in looking at square feet of enclosure area. This is used for air tightness measurements. So I guess I'd try to point you in the direction of using square foot measures, whether it's usable floor square footage for energy purposes, just because the those are established units. And then when we get to air tightness, we're looking at square foot of total envelope.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. Did you wanted to add anything? No. Okay.
That's
okay. Okay. And another caller here, also Champagne, line 3. Hello.
Yes. I just have a couple of things I just want to ask about. I live in a pre-war brick, about 2,300 feet, so it's mm-hmm. it's a little large. But it's
no, it's average.
Actually, yeah, these days I think 2,500 is average technically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But which is frightening. But we keep it, you know, like 60 at night and 63 during the day in terms of heat, and so we're comfortable with that. Actually, my wife is foreign, and she's actually used to being cool in the house.
Sure.
But we have these three windows, very large windows on the east side of the house. And they're single windows. They're not double. So there's a lot of energy that's, you know, we have a problem there. And we've been told that we should, you know, make those into double windows. But each one of them is like, 5 feet by 3 feet. They're very, very large. Mm-hmm. And so what we had one fellow do was make us these very cheaply, these sort of plastic with slats with clear plastic on them. And then we put them in the window each winter. But is that very... Do you think that there's something else we could do that would help? Because doing a double window, I mean, I was given estimates like $3,000 per window. You know, I was just flabbergasted at the cost. And,
yeah, that sounds high. The number you just cited. I bet you could shop that around and get it down in down. I would suspect under $1,000.
Okay. Yeah,
I could
sense
be wrong
there
on that.
Some that might be around $1,000 per each, right? And it's still an incredible amount of money.
But a storm window would give you essentially the same benefits, but that you'd want to have it installed. If it's a large window like that, you might have it installed permanently. You wouldn't. There's no real need necessarily to take it off,
right?
And use other windows for ventilation. So,
right.
I think that either with a storm window or what I like are insulated glass storm windows. We don't see many of those. But there's a real investment. But you leave the window intact and come in with a real energy conserving storm window. It'll cost more, but I think it's a direction to head.
And who does that sort of?
Nobody.
Not around here.
And I take that back. I think any person who's familiar and comfortable working on windows can get together with a glass company to know what sizes and thicknesses and glass specifications would be necessary. Laminated it may come into play, and make some decisions. I haven't seen insulated glass storm windows, but I've had several occasions to recommend them.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Other questions are certainly welcome. We have about 10 minutes or so left in this part of Focus 580 with Bill Rose. He is a research architect with the Building Research Council of the U of I, housed in the Department of Architecture. And we have talked on and off a number of years about a lot of different sorts of things. about how buildings are designed and constructed. And in recent years, I think really we've been talking about we've talked certainly about historic preservation. That's a big subject that he's very interested in, but also in the idea of energy efficiency in buildings and the way that they're designed and constructed. Well, you just before we got going here, you said one of the things that had struck you recently was the person who was the head of the Green Buildings Council had said, you know, we've been paying a lot of attention to these issues in new buildings.
Right.
Well, it's really time that we change our focus and looked at existing buildings.
Right.
As I'm sure there are more of them and we got to live with them. And, you know, we can't just tear every one of those down and build a new building to replace it. But also you said that it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be cheap. Maybe we need to have a lot more data about how people use energy and where. Somehow this is going to involve spending money. And, you know, you have to wonder, well, where is this money going to come from? Would you say really to do this, that what you're going to have to do is find some kind of a way, I don't know, if you give people tax rebates or you actually make grants available or, you know, whatever it is, that somehow can we expect that people are going to be able to reach in their own pockets and come up with the money that it's going to take to deal with this?
Well, let me just give you an example. I was working just a few days ago on Theodore Roosevelt's family home. I was asked there by the National Park Service, and they want to equip this house built in 1884 for the future. It's going to be a flagship project for the National Park Service, and they wanted to know what should they do. They can – and because it's a flagship for the National Park Service, which takes – which sort of spearheads the federal preservation technology movement. A lot of people in the Park Service are going to be looking at that, and a lot of people in preservation look at the Park Service. So we got to do the right thing here. And the options that we're going to put on the table include do nothing. It's a leaky old house, and you're just going to have to live with it, and that's the way it goes. The other is let's strip the entire cladding. Let's make it really airtight. Let's make it well insulated, avoid all the thermal bridges, and then we can go ahead and put the cladding back, but it's certainly not going to be the original fabric. Or somewhere in between there. I think all of us face precisely those same options, and that is how big an intervention should we make when we don't have the answer to that question. And I think a lot of people are going to be making their own answers to those questions, and a lot of people like me are going to be holding off and seeing how this actually plays out. Mm-hmm. So the do nothing option is, if you can save energy and keep your powder dry to save some money aside for the intervention when it's going to be most effective. And that's I'm in favor of that. But in my opinion, the main thing about how much money do I spend now to save money later is what the discount rate between what you project to save and what you're actually going to save. And my guess is 50%. If you have a strategy and the web tells you that you're going to save this much money,
you're probably only going to save half.
You're only going to save half of it. Okay. We really have to get this measured savings part down right. Mm-hmm. There's a program that the state is putting forward. The name of it doesn't occur to me right now. That will encourage utility customers to invest in energy savings, and there will be benefits that accrue for that. Fine, that's good. If you buy insulation, then perhaps you deserve some reward. But how about the people like me who file the low end of their thermostat down so that they can turn it past the 60 minimum into 55? You know, I'm not investing anything in doing that, but I'm I think, really saving energy. And what about the people who have already invested in energy savings? What, it's the people who come late to the party who get all the benefits? We need to find a way to reward real consumers, the people who aren't using the fuel, rather than the people who are consumers and who think that they can consume their way to conservation. Well, I can guess. I can hope.
All right. We have a couple minutes left here. We have some other callers. Let's talk with someone here in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hello. It's actually Urbana.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, welcome. Go ahead.
Make any difference anyway.
Yeah.
I have windows on the south side of the house. They have storms. The storm window, the window actually comes out of the storm. Would there be any benefit to putting plastic over the screen on the outside? The windows are tight.
Yeah, I don't know. The real answer to the question would be, well, how much energy, if we were to walk this through, you'd kind of have to run the numbers. How much energy are you actually using to condition the house in summer, in winter? What's the contribution of overall air tightness to this amount of energy? 30%, I don't know, just as a guess, in the wintertime. In the summertime, it depends incredibly on how much you use the air conditioner. Air tightness is kind of important during the winter. It's pretty much the whole kit and caboodle during the summertime. So a building that doesn't use much in the way of summertime conditioning may not see the benefits that from air tightening that someone who relies a whole lot on air conditioning will see. And then how much does that one window contribute to the overall – do the windows in general contribute to the overall leakiness? And then that window. So my answer would be give it a try.
Well, it's certainly worth a try. Actually, because of my wife's allergies, the windows don't get open during the summer.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and there's an extreme overhang on the roof, so the sun doesn't reach the windows from, say, June through July and August. I suppose May, June, July, and August, if that enters into it.
Yeah. I can only give you a general answer, and that is that the old fears about air tightness in buildings are kind of put by the side. We don't roll down the windows on our car when we run the air conditioning on our car on a hot, muggy Sunday afternoon. We keep them up. If we're going to be using air conditioning, let's make sure we're using them in pretty tight buildings, and the tightness of buildings can be measured by people who measure those things, energy auditors, and they're hard to come by, but I bet they'll become more and more available. And then opportunities for tightening buildings can be found.
Well, it'll certainly not be an expensive retrofix.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thank you. We're down to a minute or two, a couple of minutes left. I'm thinking here about whether it's, you know, you asked this question, well, who might be a natural agent to try to encourage people to be more energy efficient? And one of those probably actually is the utility company.
Yeah.
At least they do that. And yet at the same time, I think, well, now, wait a minute. They're in the business of selling energy. So, does it really make sense? Can we really expect them? Are they really doing something to try to persuade people to use less? Doesn't that run slightly counter to their interests?
Yeah, I think that the remaining petroleum that we have, taking the several generations view of this, that remaining petroleum is so precious that there ought to be a lot of thought that goes into the use of how this resource is actually going to be used. And not that these aren't conscientious people and that they don't do a good job of delivering of making sure there's equitable delivery of this resource. But yeah, I'd step back and say let's put a whole lot more thought into what the allocations of these really, really of this remaining material really, really ought to be to carry us into a period when it's no longer available.
Yeah, just because there's you know, you can put it in the tank of your car, yeah, but there's a lot of other things, and you might argue that, you know, maybe those things might be more important. I don't know, different things you can do with the with that stuff that comes out of the ground.
Yeah. It might be better used for foam insulation so that the consumption of it, where it simply goes away, is less. I'm sad that that we're just sort of allowing this precious resource to slip through our fingers the way it is.
Well, I said at the beginning of the program this was a conversation that never ends.
It's
not over. Okay. So we just kind of put it on hold, and we say we'll come back and talk about more of these things on another day, I'm sure. In the meantime, our thanks to Bill Rose. He is a research architect with the U of I Building Research Council. That's a part of the Department of Architecture here at the U of I School of Architecture. And occasionally he's here and has been on and off for a long time. We talk about design, construction, preservation, operation of buildings. Thank you.
Sure. Very much. Glad to have.